This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, in the COVID pandemic, we have reached another important juncture. The Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Holohan, expressed concern yesterday when the latest figures for infections were announced. 5,634 people were infected, and that was announced yesterday. That's quite a lot. It's a lot more than we had weeks ago and even days ago. The pressure on the health service is acute. On the intensive care beds, ICUs, on the health service in general, and there is, of course, serious knock-on effects for people who are waiting for operations, elective surgery of all kinds, a problem that existed before this pandemic ever reached us. There is also serious concern about the frontline workers, the nurses, doctors, and healthcare professionals who are tired, they're understaffed. So the extent of this crisis is all the way through our society. People are worried about their jobs, their businesses, about their elderly and frail relatives, about themselves. We have reached a real crisis. And to discuss why and what we might do to alleviate it, we're joined now by Tomás Ryan. Tomás is Associate Professor at the School of Biochemistry and Immunology at Trinity College, and he has been an accurate guide for us on the stand throughout this pandemic, most recently on the question of schools and teachers and infections in schools. And that, again, is something that is of immediate concern. Tomás, thank you very much for joining us. Just on a general point, it was expected that infections would go up when we reopened society, nightclubs and pubs, and all those people were queuing for coppers and that kind of stuff. There would be an increase in the infection rate, but it would plateau at some stage and come down. Is that where we're at? This is okay.
I don't think this is okay. I think it's obvious that we're in trouble. I think it's obvious to anyone on the street that we're in trouble now. I think that this is a situation that unfortunately was predictable. It was also predicted by many of my colleagues. And NPHET were aware of the risks, but they proceeded with an experiment. They proceeded with an informed experiment, which was based on some idea of what we sometimes call herd immunity. And what NPHET were banking on was that our extremely high vaccination rate in Ireland, in combination with infection, would essentially create a population immunity situation that would mean cases would plateau and then go down around now. I was hoping that this gamble would pay off, and it was a gamble. It didn't. And we are where we are, which always seemed to me to be the most likely scenario. The virus has not changed trajectory. The virus has been on this trajectory for many months now. And we're just seeing the worst of it. Well, not the worst of it, but we're getting into a bad situation right now. It's been observed by commentators in the media that right now we're in a holding pattern. I mean, politically, in how we deal with the virus, that the next 2 weeks, the government want to see how the messaging from the chief medical officer may change people's behavior and bring things under control before we have to have restrictions from government. Now, that's very ambitious. And the reason it's very ambitious is that right now, almost one in 100 people in Ireland are actively infectious.
Yes.
That's how many people are infected right now. In the past month, 100,000 people have been infected. In contrast, last year, for the three-month period of December, January, February, 150,000 people were infected. So in the last month, we've had 100,000 people infected. Right now, 30,000 people are actively infectious, at least. And we're going to have, no matter what we do, we're going to have far more infections in this winter season than we did last winter season. So we're in a really precarious position. Now, because of the messaging of NPHET and because of the messaging of government, we know that a lot of people are now getting on board with the idea that there's going to have to be some kind of restrictions. And we know a lot of people are working from home now over the past week and will continue to do so. Now, the government are hoping that with a large part of the population, therefore reducing their contacts, that this will start to turn things around. And of course, everything makes a difference. The problem is that nightclubs are still open and restaurants are still open at full capacity. And the real thing that we need, it's not about 50% of the population who maybe were not being that social anyway, moving from the office to moving at home. What we need is for 100% of the population to reduce their contacts by at least 50%. So if every single person in Ireland reduced their contacts to 50% of what it was for the last couple of months, then we might get out of this without significant restrictions. But that's probably not going to happen.
Let me just put the argument against that to you. And before I do, I just explain the point about herd immunity. Of those 5,634 people who were deemed to be infected yesterday, they will all, once the disease has passed, and provided they don't end up in ICU or in hospital, they will all be immune. It will be the same as having had a vaccine. I just want to explain that point. Now, the point you raised there, if people restrict their activities to the point where they're working from home, then we could get out of the situation we're in at the moment. The situation we're in at the moment, though, involves people who work in the hospitality industry, for example, in pubs and restaurants, in hotels, in all kinds of places, also in retail. Now, the feeling is those people are at their wits' end. They haven't got money. They're fearful for their jobs. So it's unreasonable to expect them to simply close their front door and sit there.
I think it's completely unreasonable to expect this problem to be solved by what we call personal responsibility. It just doesn't work. We can only deal with issues of such broad societal concern that involves so many people, both in the causes and the consequences of them, that it can only happen with leadership from the top. And I've been extremely disappointed, in the strongest possible terms, with some of the statements that Dr. Tony Holohan, the chief medical officer, and also members of government have made about the pandemic, that it's on the citizens now and we just have to exercise personal responsibility. It is not possible to solve this problem with personal responsibility alone. And as a society, I believe we are absolutely required to support people whose businesses are affected by any restrictions, as we have been doing throughout the pandemic. But to speak to the issue of whether there's another way of solving this by allowing people to get infected. That's not going to work. If we simply allow people to get infected, we are going to have an unmanageable rate of hospital admissions and of ICU admissions and of deaths. And some commentators in the media have been remarking, look, this isn't like last Christmas. We don't need to be worried. Well, last Christmas wasn't like last Christmas either until it was.
Yes.
And this Christmas can be as bad as last Christmas. Now, there's a qualification that I need to make there. This Christmas can't be as bad as last Christmas could have been. So if we had no vaccines last year, so if we had completely let it rip through the population last Christmas, not just for 3 weeks, but completely let it rip before vaccination, last Christmas we could have had in and around 40 or 50,000 deaths. Those numbers still hold up, and that would have been absolute carnage. And no country did that, which is why we, after 3 weeks of opening, we went back into a hard lockdown. So that's not going to happen. You know, there's no possibility of us falling off the cliff, but we can fall down the hill. And if we allow ourselves to fall down the hill for enough time, as we are now doing, we can certainly have as many deaths or more deaths than we did last Christmas, based on the infections through, not just through infecting the unvaccinated, but through vaccine breakthroughs. And this was anticipated, I think, in very concrete terms since July and August. We knew that the Delta variant reduced vaccine efficacy. And so to get what we call herd immunity with the Delta variant, it would require 87% of all people to be vaccinated with a vaccine of 100% efficacy. Now, 87.5%, Eamon, includes children.
Yes.
Right now in Ireland, we're used to hearing that 92% of people are vaccinated. In fact, right now, only 92% of adults are vaccinated, but 75% of the Irish population is vaccinated. And none of our vaccines are 100% effective. Pfizer, Moderna are in and around 80 to 90% effective, and AstraZeneca is around 60, 65% effective. But to get herd immunity, you would need 87.5% of all people, including children, inoculated with a vaccine that's 100% effective. That is theoretically impossible. And that's before you even start talking about vaccine longevity. I don't like saying waning immunity. I think we should call it vaccine longevity. We know it's decreasing. We knew since August that it's been it decreases by about 50% after 5 to 6 months, and that therefore a booster course would be necessary. So the idea of herd immunity or population immunity was out since early summer, if not much earlier than that. And we knew that we would be likely to face this kind of situation that we're facing this winter. So if we continue as we're going, it looks like the best case scenario is we'll have as many people in the ICU as last Christmas. And the more pessimistic scenarios is modeled by Neffet, which don't even seem to me to be the worst case scenario, but the more pessimistic scenarios suggest we could have up to 500 people in the ICU this winter, which is over twice as many as were there last year. So we've got a problem, and so far we're just talking in the facts of the problem. And the question from there is what do we do about it?
Yeah, well, let me ask you two questions. I want to come to schools and teachers. I mean, many teachers now are out, and they either have the infection, or they suspect they may have it, or they are close contacts. But I want to ask you about the picture we see when we look across Europe. Yesterday, the German health minister said that very soon Germans will be either recovered, vaccinated, or dead. And that's a direct quote at a press conference from an exasperated German health minister. There are riots in the Netherlands. There are riots in Brussels. Tens of thousands of people in Brussels on Sunday night. And across Germany, there is widespread public dissent, and the numbers are growing almost exponentially. Is there any commonality between what we're experiencing here in Ireland and what we're seeing across Europe? Or do you have to take each country separately?
I mean, there's an awful lot to unpack there, Eamon. You do need to take each country separately for all kinds of reasons, different cultural tendencies, different ways the pandemic has been experienced there, different pandemic behaviors in the population, different policies from the government, different degrees of indoor airborne transmission, depending on the weather outside in a given country. But regarding all the points you just made, I mean, I would go back to a point that I made very early in the pandemic. In a podcast with yourself, which is that I think that the outcome over the next few months, just as the outcome of much of the pandemic, will be decided by journalists. How things happen in Ireland for us is going to be, I think, in many ways determined by how journalists communicate what is happening right now and how they investigate what is happening. And the reason I say that is because, unlike other things in our social and political life, the pandemic is a moving target. It's very dynamic and it changes very rapidly.
Yes.
And there's only so much time that we have to make a change. We have to do things very quickly, in days to weeks, not in months. And that gives an advantage to any government that wants to choose intransigence or wants to choose entrenchment, because they know that the window for opportunity for doing anything changes very quickly. And the only way to counter that is to have journalism that is thorough, that is investigative, that is clear, and that is brave. And we are seeing that very much, particularly in the past few weeks. And one of those things is how we've seen a light being shone on schools in Ireland. Now, we've known, in my opinion, based on the scientific literature, that since we've had the Alpha variant, the British B.1.1.7 variant, that children would transmit the virus as much as adults. And it's certainly true since the Delta variant. And this has been sort of wallpapered over by NPHET and by government.
On this podcast, you told us months ago that this was a danger, and a very serious danger. So this, anyone listening to The Stand would have known about the dangers of schools and children a long time ago.
Yes. So the rule of thumb, and I think this is becoming known in Ireland, I mean, it's been appreciated in the US for quite a long time now, because the American Center for Disease Control, an extremely sober, centrist, well-established organization, has been saying for months, in the most explicit way, that children are at risk. We can summarize it based on two rules of thumb. One, you can assume that an unvaccinated child transmits the Delta variant as much as an unvaccinated adult. That's just known and accepted internationally. The second thing is that, yes, children are at lower risk themselves to COVID-19, but they are still at risk. So they may be 10 or 20 times less of at risk for being hospitalized than someone who's in their 40s or older. But the problem is that there's 560,000 primary school children in Ireland who are unvaccinated. And if you infect a large number of them, then even though it's a smaller percentage than adults that would end up in hospital, a lot of them will still end up in hospital. And we're starting to see this in Ireland, where about 50 children have been hospitalized with COVID-19 in the past 2 weeks. And we know that in the UK, 130 children have died of COVID-19. And in the US, over 700 children have died of COVID-19. And again, I really don't want to be alarmist, but that means that we're at risk of losing 10 to 20 children in Ireland if we really let this spread through the child population. And it is spreading right now through the child population. Even though contact tracing was egregiously stopped in schools towards the beginning of this term, and school principals were left managing the situation, which they're not equipped to do. I get emails about when there's head lice in my children's class, but I don't get emails about when there may be COVID in my children's class necessarily, because it's a much more difficult thing to manage, and you cannot expect schools to contact trace them. But even based on the level of community surveillance that we have, we can see right now that case growth is most high in the country in primary school kids who are 5 to 14 and in the age range of their parents. So we know that cases in this age group are rapidly growing in Ireland, and we're fighting half blind because we're not testing and contact tracing within the school environment. So we need
are those classrooms ventilated properly and as well as they could be?
No, not sufficiently.
Right.
As we've discussed before, we need face masks, in my opinion, FFP2 face masks, as is being done in France, Germany, and in most parts of the US that I'm aware of. We need air filtration, HEPA filters in each classroom. We need to restore contact tracing, and we need to do serial saliva-based testing. And just to give a number on that, we've said many times that it would cost 10 to 20 million euro to place HEPA filter devices in every classroom in Ireland. Orla Hegarty recently pointed out that the amount of money the Department of Education has spent on hand sanitizer for schools is in and around 50 million euro.
Right.
So there is no question of us being able to afford to do this. The problem is that the government in NPHET are unwilling to admit what other governments in, say, Canada and Japan and Israel have admitted, which is that the virus is airborne and that children are vulnerable. And I really want to focus on solutions, Eamon, and I don't want to be throwing stones, and I don't want to be creating that type of feeling, but I have really lost confidence in much of what NPHET are doing, particularly in the past few weeks. I think that their position on airborne transmission is untenable. I think that it is...
What are they saying? Because everybody knows that it has an aerosol effect, that it is transmitted through the air.
They've been placing emphasis on droplet transmission. And droplet transmission, of course, is important. It's the drops of saliva that you spit out when you talk or you cough.
Yeah.
That they don't spread in the air the way aerosol does.
Yep.
And they've been avoiding this and papering over it. And they've been saying very strongly for some time.
Why?
Because you have to take responsibility for environments. The government would have to take responsibility for schools and hospitals. IBEC would need to make sure that they provide proper supports for their own members' business environments, for people working there, that our buildings in Ireland are simply not sufficiently ventilated, and everybody knows it, so people don't want to take responsibility for the airborne transmission issue. On top of that, NPHET have been ignoring, or at least not communicating, the science on schools, on risk to children, and on child transmission. The science of NPHET is 180 degrees at odds with the US Center for Disease Control. So either NPHET, and I don't mean to be glib, but either NPHET don't have internet access, or they're choosing not to communicate this for some reason. Furthermore, they've been deeply ingrained on other issues, such as you're aware, antigen testing. I don't think antigen testing is as big of an issue with respect to our response as is being displayed in the media. For the reasons I say that is, we're already using it. A lot of us, I'm using it. And that it's being used extensively in the UK. The UK are doing everything right with antigen testing, providing it for free, etc. And yet the UK have the worst situation for COVID in Europe. So I don't think antigen testing is a major issue. But the way that, I think we should be using more of it. And I think we need better communication of it, absolutely. And yes, I think we should be using it in places like schools, though I'd prefer saliva testing. But I think it is an illustration of NPHET's behavior. And I think a lot of it does seem, frankly, to be based on egos and on entrenchment in their views. It seems to be that NPHET have always been semi-political in how they're doing things. They're not independent scientists who are assigned this role or who were competitively selected for this process. Most of NPHET are Department of Health or HSE employees. And they were seconded to the role of NPHET in an emergency situation. I think that they've always been negotiating with government, and they're the last line of defense. And I have to say, one of the reasons I don't want to criticize NPHET is because when things really go bad, NPHET are there to make sure that we're digging trenches around the city before the tanks roll in. And they're actually quite good at that. We, from the three lockdowns we've had, NPHET have been the ones to force government to have unpleasant measures when we didn't want to do them. The problem is that guys who can get us out digging trenches around the city are not the guys you want preventing the invasion in the first place. And I think we need to move away from a national public health and emergency team towards a national public health strategy team, because I think it's quite clear that in the past few months, the strategy that has been developed by NPHET has failed. And the communication from NPHET continues to fail. So without questioning the character or intentions of anyone involved in it, I think that we need to take a very good look at how we're managing this into the future.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
We have at the moment a very precarious situation. I think that word has been used by the chief medical officer. He is very concerned. We had 5,634. We had 6,000, I think, at the weekend on one day, infections, that is. This was expected, and you told us on this podcast a couple of weeks ago that there would be a rise in infections as soon as we opened up as a consequence of opening up. But others have told us that, and they said then they will go down and they will plateau and they will be manageable. Is that your vision of where we're going in the next 4 weeks?
No. I think in
and there's people going around. Sorry, I'm sorry to interrupt you. There are people going around talking to us about saving Christmas, quote unquote. Will we, let's forget the saving Christmas nonsense, but in terms of where we're going and protecting the health service and protecting each other and protecting people who are working in the health service, what's going to happen now if we stay as we are with the people in charge who are in charge?
The best case scenario, which is what the government are hoping for, is that in this two-week period, we get the R number below 1 in case it starts to decline again.
What is the R number now?
It's between 1.2 and 1.3, which is relatively low, but we have such high cases. This is the problem. So the best case scenario would be we all change our behavior enough in this two-week period so that enough of us go into self-imposed lockdown And this brings down cases a little bit. And we keep it there for most of Christmas. So we don't really have a normal Christmas, of course, but it won't be because of restrictions. It would be because of us. And the pressure that we currently see on the hospitals wouldn't increase significantly, but would be maintained, unfortunately, I think, through a lot of the season. So it would still be a very difficult period. But I don't think that's very likely. What it seems to me is going to happen is that this, at the end of this 2-week period, we're not going to see enough of a change. We surely, hopefully, will see a reduction in the rate of increase. So not a reduction, but a reduction in how quickly things are accelerating, unless that's countered by more people socializing indoors simply because of the changing weather and because of recent large scale social events. So we'll see. Either way, I don't think it's going to be enough. And restrictions of some kind, unfortunately, are going to be necessary. If we don't engage in some kind of restrictions, then it's going to result in the same zone of loss of life and hospitalization as we saw last year. And I know this is really frustrating for many people. I find it personally extremely frustrating myself. And some people will say, well, you know, look, we vaccinated everyone. That's all we can do. But that's not all we do for measles. We vaccinate everyone for measles, but when there's a measles outbreak, we take it very seriously. I know other people will say, look, the government screwed up on so many levels here, whether it's prevention, whether it's boosters, whether it's antigen testing. So it's not our fault. It is the government's fault. And therefore, I don't want my freedoms restricted. And, you know, it is the government's fault. The buck stops with them. But that doesn't change the fact that a lot of people can die unless we prevent that from happening. So just because the government made mistakes, and they did, doesn't mean there's not still something we can do to prevent worse outcomes. What we need to do is really look at this in the medium term and the long term, because we'll be back in this situation again next winter if we don't change how we're managing this pandemic. We've been relying on one thing throughout the pandemic. First, we were relying just on lockdowns, which was placing the burden on the public. And then we were relying just on vaccines. And we've had so much vaccine euphoria in this country. And that's been a good thing.
Yes.
But relying on one thing is not the way to deal with any pandemic, particularly COVID-19. The reason we are in this mess right now is that we've been relying on one thing, vaccines, and ignoring prevention. So therefore, it seems to me that the best way out of the hole we're in is probably not to rely on one thing, probably not just to rely on vaccines to get us out of here and ignore prevention.
Yes.
And some of the narrative that we're hearing is that boosters are going to get us out of this. And we know that boosters are essential. I actually would very much agree with the language of the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar on this topic, where he says he sees it as the third part of a vaccine course rather than a booster. I think that's an accurate description. And we're late with boosters, unfortunately, but that's the way it is. And there's a suggestion that if we rush the boosters before Christmas, we could get the million people over 40 who still need to get their boosters done a week before Christmas, so they will be protected for a normal Christmas week. Now, we need to drop that attitude, because we know where that attitude got us last year. That would also mean rushing boosters, doing them 4 months apart instead of 5 months from your last dose. Now, we don't know if that's going to be a problem or not. People already get it 4 months after their second dose if they're immunocompromised.
Yeah.
So, but large scale, it's generally done minimum 5 months. And then there's the logistical issue of, can it even be done in that time frame? But there's also the issue, Eamon, which I think is a very serious ethical choice that the government are going to have to make. And I personally don't know the answer to this question, which is, children need to be vaccinated. And the EMA, the European Medicines Association, are probably going to approve vaccines for 5 to 12-year-olds as soon as early next week. And as soon as early next week, there will be nothing stopping us from vaccinating children in Ireland. It's already happening in the USA because the Food and Drug Administration approved it there. So we have a million adults over 40 who at some point should get a booster. And we have 560,000 children in primary schools who have not been vaccinated at all. So if you take the mentality of it's a race to get people vaccinated before Christmas, then you've got to make a choice. And that is not an easy choice to make, because of course, the people who are most likely to die from COVID are people who are in their 50s, 60s, 70s, even if they've been vaccinated due to limited vaccine longevity. On the other hand, our children have not been vaccinated at all. And some of them will die if they all get infected, and many of them will be hospitalized, and a lot of them will get long COVID.
So what you're saying is, if we get the okay from the European Medical Agency next week, early next week, we should vaccinate the children as a matter of priority.
My personal view is that, and I declare my conflict of interest as a parent, my personal view is that the US CDC has the right attitude. And I think that if we get the EMA approval next week, the next day we should start vaccinating children in Ireland, not in January. This should not take NIAC months to approve. We should start vaccinating children immediately, because we are now entering the worst part of the pandemic in Ireland for being a child, because COVID is evidently spreading through our schools and it is scientifically clear that it is a risk to children. So because children are so exposed on account of our actions, I personally believe we should vaccinate children immediately as a matter of priority.
Okay, Tomás Ryan, thank you very much for joining us. Tomás is Associate Professor at the School of Biochemistry and Immunology at Trinity College. And we're very grateful to Tomás, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.